Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Hi, do you enjoy diving into true crime
and tales of the paranormal?
Then join us. I'm Anna.
And I'm Lindsay on our podcast, Ghosts in the Attic, Bodies in the Basement.
A Fearscape Media Network podcast.
New episodes air every other Friday on wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you for tuning in to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. We are on a journey to understand and to discover the phenomena that seems to exist all around the globe. We invite you to join us on this journey into the unknown.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting adventure in Fearscape Paranormal. I am your host, Stephen Gearhart, and I am joined, as always, by the man that history will not forget, my co-host, Mr. Josh Rutledge. How are you today, sir?
I am doing fantastic. You know, I was just talking to my kids the other day about, you know, being remembered after, you know, what will your legacy be, right? Mm-hmm. On the world and your life, you know, who will you affect?
You Dead Poet Society me, hit it.
So and Kristen, my wife, was like, well, you know, Papa, that's what they call me, Papa, will always be remembered because he has a podcast, he has a YouTube show, and so, and then
and he has a loud best friend.
Yeah, I have a loud best friend. Right, exactly.
Josh Rutledge, take him.
Right, as you push me ahead. So
exactly.
I mean, so yeah, you know, just yeah, history won't forget us because people are listening, and we're going to be forever locked, you know, unless of course there's some sort of a giant solar flare and all electronics are lost. Then, you know, unless we print our podcast episodes in a book or something. So
I'm working on that. But speaking of loud, yeah, we have a really cool episode. Joining us again is one of our dear friends, ufologist, author, occultist, badass mofo, Alan Greenfield is back on the show. Josh, he is going to be talking to us. We are talking to him, and we are going to all three of us be talking about the Anunnaki
or the Anunnaki
or the Anunnaki or the Anukukuku,
or in all actuality probably has some other pronunciation that we're completely wrong
about. I know, it's probably like the okay. Excuse me.
Yeah,
got a little phlegm in my throat.
So yeah,
it's actually Klingon.
But no, it was a great conversation with Alan on this topic, and I think y'all were gonna really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have Alan on. You know, he's always like, "I'm sorry, guys, if you guys got to reel me in," and we're always like, "Sorry, you got to reel us in, bro." Like, sorry. But I'll tell you what. I just loved hearing the both of you guys talk. I think this is the least talking I've done in a long time because I was just so fascinated. I love talking about the Anunnaki and Sumerian legend and lore and things like that. But I love just hearing you and Alan going back and forth on that research. Just it's fascinating. I love me some Alan Greenfield, and I love me some Josh Rutledge. So you guys are in for a special treat tonight. Just a quick reminder, we are still soliciting, as we do, knocking on your door like a Jehovah's Witness asking for funds. But these are funds with a big F-U-N in the beginning, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big fun.
They're fantastic.
They are fantastic. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/Fearscape I think that's all it is.
that's all it is.
Correct. Yeah, that's all it is. There you can do a one-time donation. We're getting ready to go in July. We're going to be going to the MUFON UFO Symposium in Las Vegas, Nevada. Or Nevada, whatever. Or Nevada. So we're going to be doing that. So we're going to be spending some money to get there. We're going to be trying to cover that as best as possible and hopefully hooking up with some old friends like Kathleen Martin, who's going to be teaching there, and some other...
Some new friends.
Some new friends as well. So we're going to be doing that. So, but that's one way that you can help us kind of do that as well as help out the show. The other way is by joining our Patreon, which is, of course, patreon.com/fearscapepod or just fearscapepodcast.com/support. Those are some really great ways to help two brothers out.
Or buy something from the store. We just added and are continuing to add a bunch of awesome merch. Like I put up probably about 20 or 30 different Sasquatch related designs just last week alone. So there's just all kinds of stuff out there for you to get. And you know, some of the things that you know are our types of designs that we've uploaded, and other things that are just things that we found cool on the T Public site.
We are
added
always,
them to our store.
We are actively creating designs, finding designs, adding designs, just stuff that we find awesome and hilarious. That fits
our
theme.
You could say it's a curated collection.
Oh, yes, you might. It's also salted and smoked. Oh, that's cured. Sorry, never
that's
mind.
Cured, yeah.
Sorry, never mind. But yeah, go ahead. And so again, that's fearscapepodcast.com/store. You can also check out the Fearscape Media Network, other shows. There's some swag on there for the other shows if you're a big Mistress of the Dark fan or Ghosts in the Attic, Bodies in the Basement fan, which of course I know it's past now, but another happy birthday to Anna. So excited. And congratulations to Lindsay on her adoption of her little girl. So I'm really excited about that as well. We love the Gab girls and the Gab women. Right. But Gab girls is just, I like alliteration, so I go with that. Make sure to check them out. But let's get cracking, Josh, man. I'm ready to rock and roll because we got some funsies before we get to Alan Greenfield Z's. So first segment of the week, of course, is Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary Psychic Word of the Week.
And now the psychic word of the week.
All right. So again, this comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from June G. Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, honey bear. So this week I flipped to page 532. And the first thing that I see here is... Religious King of the Dead.
King
of the Dead. Not my high school nickname. I know some people thought that, but that's not what it was. It's from Tibet, and it's a simple one. It simply means an etheric world god depicted holding a mirror to reflect the soul mind as seen in the Wheel of Life mandala. Not Mandela. But mandala. I know some of you are like, no, when I remember when it was mandala.
You know, kind of thinking about that. I know we're not doing a mandala effect tonight, and I don't. This kind of is fitting into the
Mandela
psychic word. Sorry, whatever. The psychic word there is. I was recently watching a couple of different videos by our good friend Bashar.
Oh man, hey, we have not talked about Bashar in a long time, and boy, if you're new to the show and you haven't gone back and listened to our entire archive like good fans do, we have not done an episode on Bashar, but we have definitely talked about Bashar. Bashar is an alien that is channeled through a guy. What's his name? Do you know Ian? Or
No, it's like John.
Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt or something. I don't
John
know.
Dingo or something. I don't know.
But I love Bashar. Like, just B-A-S-H-A-R. Just Google Bashar and have some fun.
If you have Gaia, there's actually a really cool little documentary about like how this guy got started and how he started to be a channel and how he got connected to Bashar and all that kind of stuff. But anyways, basically this guy gets up on stage, he channels and then channels Bashar, you know, to talk about whatever and answer questions. So the way this was related to tonight's word, though, and something else that we were talking about is I recently watched it was an older clip, but it was about a woman asked him, what about time travel? Mm-hmm. And he said in his response that every time that you you make a decision or you change your viewpoint or you change your stance on something, that your soul shifts to a different dimension, a different earth, a different timeline.
I've heard something similar to that on been listening to a ton of old Art Bell Coast to Coast. And one of the guys he had on there, they were talking about time travel, and somebody had mentioned a similar theory to that, a little bit different, but yeah, that's crazy.
So synchronicity, like thousands of times a second, you know, you're thinking about something, your soul is just kind of hopping around these different earth timelines or different earths, even, you know, that, you know, in the multiverse or whatever, multi-dimension. So I just thought it was really interesting that, you know, the kind of that soul mirror is almost kind of along that line where, you know, you're shifting or you're looking at yourself differently. So,
yeah, it's interesting. Bashar is great. The reason we laugh when we talk about him, he's great content. But the voice that this man has when he's Bashar is the best. He's like, I am Bashar and welcome to WCHQ.
I mean, like, he's completely different when he's channeling Bashar.
His mannerisms, his facial, and it's so funny to hear it at first. But then you start listening to what Bashar has to say and you're like, I'm in. Yeah. And he's funny. Like, Bashar is like funny. Like, he's just, I don't know, I really like Bashar. It's fun stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, that might be a future episode, is just, you know, what are the top 10 things that Bashar has said,
Bashar
so,
quotes. Oh, I'm totally in for that. We should do that on TikTok, which we should be having one sooner or later down the road. But the other thing I was going to say, the interesting thing about this word of the week is being from Tibet. The interesting thing about Tibet is Buddhism at its root is an atheistic religion, and Tibetan Buddhism is this weird, like, that it still honors the old Tibetan gods while still being an atheistic religion. It's something I practice. It's really, really interesting. And it's really hard to explain. And I'm not going to, because I'm not the Dalai Lama, but it's really cool. So it's really interesting. But anyways, let's get moving on. Cause I got somebody here and I was ready to get talking, because we are going to hit up Cryptid of the Week.
It's the Jersey Devil. Hope y'all are ready to meet some of my friends.
Cryptid of the Week.
Hello, everybody. My God, have I been on a whirlwind journey? I have seen the light. Yes, I have stepped outside the doorway, and it was daytime, Josh, and I saw the sunshine today. Just like I did yesterday.
Well, that's something special, JD.
Well, I'm excited because you informed me via electronic mail that you were going to be covering a cryptid, another one from New Jersey. And I know two, one I hate and one I love. And so, I hope it's the one that I love. So who are you going to be covering this week, Josh?
Mantis Man.
Oh, that's my arch nemesis. Damn it. Oh, I hate Mantis Man. Let me just tell you right away, he thinks that he thinks that he was on He-Man. He was not a bad guy on He-Man. He was not. And then he went through his phase where he thought he's a superhero because that show in the 80s called Mantis. You remember that?
Yep.
Yeah, bull honky. He was not even anything like that. I'm gonna sit over here for a second and stew these vegetables in my brain, and I'm gonna hand this back to Stefan while you guys cover this dookie face.
Well, I haven't seen that kind of language or heard that kind of language except from my 7-year-old. So, you know.
Well, I mean, he's about the size of them.
You shut up. I have a height deficiency.
You know, he's
the height deficiency.
He's wider than he is taller, you know, because his wingspan.
Like so we got Mantis Man. Yeah, I didn't know which one it was going to be. He wouldn't let me tell him. He said he wanted you to tell him. So
yeah, it resembles a praying mantis. It's the name Mantis Man.
Praying is why I already have an issue. I am a devil and he wants to pray. all the time. Not saying that you can't believe what you want, Josh. It's just an antithesizer of what I am at my core. It's like just opposite, like, it's the opposite day. You know, like advertising when you do something the exact opposite. That's what he does on purpose. You know, did you know that he used to be a non-praying mantis?
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Look it up on Wikipedia.
I will. At Cryptopedia.
So. Cryptopedia.
So anyways.
I thought he was doing his vegetables, but apparently.
Yeah. So the odd thing about the two sightings that have been had, both men were out fishing and saw it near a body of water. Praying mantis don't usually spend their times in water. They usually spend their times on leaves and stuff. So
leaves and ex-lovers.
Yeah. Well, until they get their heads eaten. So, mm-hmm. So mantis, you know, may be able to swim in shallow water. You know, it's huge size. Maybe it could do so, touch the bottom of the river and walk. I don't know. But the sightings says, unlike the two, apparently it was on Monsters and Mysteries in America.
Weird. I've recently been, talk about weird synchronicities, dude, because I've been recently watching that show.
You know, and this being the episode with Greenfield, you know, the kind of the king of synchronicity, if mm-hmm. you will. So, it says here that the police report tells that another person, Mr. Strickler, saw the mantis.
Is this Lon Strickler?
I don't know.
I think it might be Lon.
It might be the Mothman. So, this is in quotes. It says, I saw something strange a few weeks ago on the Mekong River near my home here in Hackettstown, New Jersey. I was driving home from the drugstore on Newburg Road. As I drove near the bridge over the river, I noticed to my left something I thought was a fisherman standing in the river just off the south bank. I slowed the car and looked closer. It wasn't a person, and it was transparent-like with a weird shape. It moved slowly towards the bank and into the trees. I drove further so I could see it coming out of the trees. That's the last I saw of it. It was tall, 8 foot or so, had long, thin arms hanging off of it. The color was a pale brown, but I could see through it. The head was small compared to the body. It was sunny that day, so I thought it may be glare from the water, but after I thought back, I realized I wasn't seeing a mirage or glare. I checked the internet and didn't see anything about it. I mentioned it to a coworker in my office at lunch on Wednesday. He gave me the strangest look. I thought, uh-oh, he thinks I'm nuts. We went back to his computer and he brought up the Hackettstown forum with the mantis man witness. So he mentions it to his coworker, who happens to also be the other witness to the mantis man.
So. That's convenient. Yeah. Or lucky. I still think it's Lon Strickler. I'm just saying.
So I'd like to draw maybe a correlation here to the amount of mantis-like extraterrestrial sightings that happen from people. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, being a bunch of different ETs, if you will, in a sighting, like they see maybe a small gray, but then when they go to the lab, they see other types of ETs, and there's oftentimes a depiction or a resemblance of some sort of a insect or praying mantis type entity there.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting. BT Dubs, I just looked it up. The Mr. Strickler is indeed Lon Strickler. I just looked it up. It says here, the very first report, much about what we know about the Mantis Man, comes from the reports of sightings sent to Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters. So he was the first person to report on this.
Oh, wow.
So very, very interesting. Man, I'm kind of like, I wish we would have known this when we had him on. We could have totally done Mantis Man back then.
It doesn't matter. It's all bull hockey, and Lon Strickler is a liar.
Whoa, hey, well, Lon is a friend of ours, okay?
If there's something New Jersey knows about, it's hockey.
This is true.
But I've never seen Bulls playing hockey, so.
Mm-mm. I have seen some Kings play hockey.
Yeah, Bruins. I've seen Bruins.
Them play. I've seen Red Wings. I've seen a house fly. But Lon, if you're listening out there, man, shoot us a line. I'd love to chat with you more about the Mantis Man. Very, very cool. But yeah, if you guys haven't watched Monsters and Mysteries in America, it's a great show on Travel Channel. Lots of fun stuff on there. This episode that this was on also talks about the Spotsville monster that we covered a long time ago in Kentucky. That's in that episode as well. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. Like, I watched that part but didn't finish. So I had no idea Mantis Man was on there. I was like, oh, Kentucky, I'm watching this. So very, very cool. JD, are you okay?
Yes. I just wanted to take a moment, and I just wanted to apologize to Josh, and I just wanted to say it's not your fault that you were given false advertisement of a real-life cool-ass cryptid like me.
Well, we all can't be winners.
No, we can't, and Mantis Man is a loser, and I'm just going to put it out there. Hashtag Mantis Man, loser man. So if y'all want to support me in any post where you share this episode, you put hashtag Mantis Man, hashtag loser man, and then I'll know you love me. I'm going to go to bed.
Okay.
Okay. Good night.
Does he sleep in a cat bed?
No, he actually sleeps under the bed in a drawer, like one of those fabric drawer thingies that you can put underneath your bed. Yeah, I open it up for him every night and I slide him back in. His wings kind of stick out on the edge.
A little bit.
But he does that as like a little platform for my cat to sleep. So he is kind of the cat bed. So
I gotcha. Yeah, interesting. Pretty cool. Yeah.
Anyways, let's go ahead and move on real quickly. Let's go ahead and get to our next segment, which is spooky news. Got a quick one here for you. All right, we got some spooky news action here for you tonight, Josh. This one, when I first saw this and first read this, I thought this was something that we had covered a while back. Do you remember that video that was making the rounds of what looked like a fairy or something in the Ring camera that we had seen? Or it looked like, I thought maybe it was like lights from a car or something like that.
Yes, I remember that. Because I had something similar show up on my Ring camera and you and Santosh told me it was a moth.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Because I didn't buy that other one. I still don't. But this one, because remember somebody said, oh, it was on the reflection on the inside. Somebody was doing a light or something like that. Anyways, this is not that at all. But that's what I thought it was, because the headline here on Coast to Coast AM, which is where I found the best articles. Most of them just showed the video. So this one actually had an article, but it says home security system triggered by ghost outside of California residence. And the YouTube video is on here. And if I remember, I will link this as well to the episode summary so that you guys can see the story. But it says the home security system of a residence in California was seemingly triggered by an eerie dark cloud that passed across a driveway in the middle of the night. And some have wondered if the curious anomaly could have been a ghost. The peculiar moment occurred in the community of Modesto over the summer, although the motion activated camera footage only surfaced this past week when the homeowner's brother posted it online. He explained that prior to the incident, the dogs were barking all night long and that his sister kept looking outside to see what was up but saw nothing. A few hours later, she received a notification from his security system that it had picked up something puzzling outside. Now, in the video, which captured at around 3 a.m. in the morning, surprise, a curious mist-like form mysteriously wafts across the driveway. Now, it took me, so they slow it down and they show you and you're like, oh, because you don't know what you're looking for at first, but once you see it, it gave me chills. The spooky anomaly appears to be fairly solid as it manages to obscure the truck behind it. After a few seconds, the undulating cloud eventually dissipates and ultimately vanishes from view. It appears that the weird visitor, whatever it may have been, was responsible for triggering the motion sensing camera, as there is nothing else in the scene which could account for why it would suddenly come to life. The brother also insists that this happened on a clear night. You know, of course, skeptical viewers say that the spirit was probably something prosaic, like a video artifact created by the camera. Or a hoax of some sort. But no, I mean, this looks legit, but it fits more along the lines of, I mean, it looks like something cloaked, like the Predator. to me. Yeah. That's it. Looks more like that. Something in a cloaking device, which goes back to your old theory about ghosts just being, you know, UTs. Well,
some ghosts, yeah.
Yeah, being UTs in camouflage, you know, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely check it out. Like I said, I'm going to post it on our page here, but you can also find it, I said again, on the Coast to Coast AM. Just look up Ghost Outside California Residence or Ghostly Mist Captured on Home CCTV, Modesto, whatever. But it's really interesting footage. They do slow it down so you can get a better view, and then you'll see it, but it's really, really cool.
Hmm.
Really, really cool. Speaking of ghosts, Josh, let's go ahead and get to, I actually have some damn creepy ketchup.
Oh, nice.
I swear I do. And so, yeah, let's jump into that real quick before we get to Alan Greenfield.
Creepy ketchup. Creepy ketchup. Creepy ketchup. Creepy ketchup. Y'all, it's creepy.
All right. Oh, I missed that theme song so much. Suck it, Brad. But yeah, so man, dude,
it's been a little bit for you.
Yeah. So last weekend, my wife and I had a little bit of a baby moon. We just stayed here in town, but we went to a hotel in town, actually over in Scottsdale where it's nicer, next to a Frisbee golf course. And it's an older hotel, but it's called the Three Palms. We really enjoyed our stay. And we got a room with a jacuzzi tub in it, which awesome. We both wanted a bath and, you know, it was great. So she took her bath. I'm on the computer. Get done. It's my time for the bath. I got the thing filled up. I'm laying there. I'm chilling. I just got some music on. I'm jamming. And I feel this hand on my shoulder. And I thought it was Sarah just putting her hand on me, you know, because my bed. So the bed is right next to the tub. So they're right next to each other. So okay. The back of my head is against the side of the bed, essentially.
Okay.
Excuse me. There's a small gap. But enough that if you're laying on that side of the bed, you can reach over and squeeze a boob or touch a shoulder.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I mean, right.
Women touch shoulders, dudes squeeze boobs. That's what we do, even our own. But anyways, so grab my shoulder. And so I was like, oh, we're on our baby moon. And I reached up and I go to put my hand on the shoulder and there's nothing there. But I could still feel the other hand on my shoulder. And I was like, well, that's weird. And I turn around and look, Sarah's completely on the other side of the bed, gone. Kenobi's in front of her. So there's no way Sarah rolled over real quick, like to do it as a joke, because she would have had to roll over Kenobi, whose ass would have been up.
Well,
we were both passed out.
Pregnant. Like there's no quick roll.
Yeah, there's no quick roll. So I was like, okay. So that happened, but I was like, hello, am I in your tub? So the second one again was at the hotel that same night. I went out and I was walking Kenobi. I was also going to the vending machine to get some snacks, and you had to walk down this long, this is one of those outdoor hotels, so it's like there's no indoor areas, right? It's just doors out to the outside. So anyways, I'm walking, but there is separations between the buildings to go through, and that's how you get to the pool or to the vending machine.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to turn left from the outside area into the middle area, and I hear running footsteps and someone come saying, watch out! And I'm like, man, is someone like running from the cops or something like that? Like Kenobi like freaks out, he kind of jumped too, so I know it wasn't just me, and I kind of peek around the corner, ain't nobody there, but I could hear the footsteps, Josh, run past me. And I know this because I watched Kenobi watch the footsteps go as he's like, where is it?
That's wild.
Man, it got me good. I'm just gonna let you know, I did not get snacks, because I turned right around, went back to the room.
That's what, like, it's stuff like that that makes me want to always stay at older hotels whenever we go anywhere. But you sometimes sacrifice a little bit on quality when you stay at an older hotel.
So, but yeah, dude, it gave me chills, especially because I haven't had anything happen in quite some time. And then
you were just so relaxed that night.
Yeah, I think so, though, because it's the first time we had relaxing moment in a while. And I had just gotten off the phone with my really good friend Elpheus Green Jr., who I haven't talked to in a while. He lives in Chicago and has done since about the time we moved out here. So I have not seen him at all. And he called me up out the blue. And so I was already relaxed. Me and Sarah catching up with a really good friend, you know, like he's a comedian too. So we're just laughing. He's telling me about Chicago and all the craziness there. So yeah, I was chilled out. I had a bath, like, you know, yeah. Whew, good times. Good times. I know that was you, June G. Bletzer, touching my shoulder. All right. Anything? And you said, so nothing for you, pretty dry week.
Yeah, pretty dry week. I mean, the only thing that I don't even know that this is worth saying, but I got home from the store late one evening. It was a pretty clear night. So I got up and I was like, just looked up at the stars and I closed my eyes and I thought, it'd be nice if I could see a UFO. And I opened my eyes again and up at the like apex of the sky, a light kind of like slowly illuminated and then slowly, you know, went out and then it never did it again. So, you know, I know that there are satellites that, you know, that tumble, right? And so as they're tumbling, they'll, you know, they'll kind of light up, you know, they'll reflect the sun's light and light up. And then, but I would think that if that was the case, I would have seen it kind of further along its track, do it again, you know, but maybe that, you know, maybe it was somewhere in like a weird tumble where it didn't do it again for like another 300 miles or something. I don't know. But
yeah, I don't know, dude. My eyes have been glued to the skies lately. I feel like something's coming that I'm going to be seeing soon. Like I can't stop looking. So I got a feeling that something's be on the lookout. Cause I mean, I know we're getting together soon. We're road tripping across America for 3 days. And so maybe we'll see something together there. I don't know.
Yeah. I've got my Ring camera at my house out in Arizona to keep an eye on things. And every morning when I get up, I go back and review the footage from the previous night to see if I catch anything.
Let me tell you what this man did to me. I go to his house and I keep an eye on it. I cut some oranges down out the tree. I use it to do my TikTok videos because it's an empty house. It's got great acoustics, so I sing. But I forgot he had a camera set up, and I'm out there and I'm checking out the pool because I'm like, it's starting to get a little warmer here, but I know that pool was cold, but I was like, I'm going to check it. And it was ice cold. And I get this bzzz. How did the pool feel? And I was like, what the hell? And then I was like, oh, okay.
I got Mr. Man. I was going to activate the microphone and talk to you.
Oh, you should have. I was so bored picking the oranges, man.
I was in the store and I didn't want to, like, you know.
I'm out there orange picking, man. But I will say I dropped them off at a homeless shelter this time because there was quite a bit. I took some, of course, for myself because I got to tell you, Josh, there's some pretty good oranges, man. But I took them to the homeless shelter. So that was really cool. Felt good about that. Still, I left a couple on there for when we drive out here. So you can grab one or two so you can have one. But yeah, anyways. Yeah. So that was my week. Creepy catch up. And I'm glad that you're weird.
Yeah. No more delay. Let's get to Alan.
We got to get to Alan, dude. We're talking
and
about
the Anunnaki. Anunnaki.
Yes, Alan Greenfield.
Hello, dear friends. I'm your head mister, Lord Stefan Gearhart.
And I am your co-mister, the man with no name, Lance Wayne.
And together we are the Misters of the... Let's try it again. The Misters of the Lance!
The Misters of the Dark!
Don't shut up! Ugh, whatever. Join us wherever you stream your favorite podcast, or go to mistersofthedark.com, where we'll be discussing all things horror, from films and books to everything in betweensies. We also have the occasional victim. I mean, guest.
Only on the Fearscape Media Network.
Shut up, Lance! I always get the last laugh.
I like reading the things. I used to read the things on the bus. I have them all memorized.
Oh, yeah.
We're going way out to save you 1.5% at CNS Bank. Oh, I remember that one.
That's a throwback.
I memorized these things when I was a kid in Augusta, Georgia. And, you know, you have wings that look like an Anunnaki. That's very, very strange.
It was, yeah, you know, I grew them for the show.
It did, and they move around. So if you guys haven't noticed, we've got Alan Greenfield here with us back on Farscape Paranormal. We are talking tonight about the Anunnaki. Josh, you do. The people can't see this at home because we're on audio, but yeah, you have beautiful stone wings.
Yeah. Well, they're very Slayer, I think. So,
like the band Slayer?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
All right.
Sure. It's audio.
It's kind of a punk thing. If you don't understand, you're not there. But I was there at the Metroplex, and they were stage diving the skinhead. So I hit one of them and left. Well, he dived right on me. I don't react kindly.
They could have been skin diving at the show, and that would have been really weird.
They hung out across the street at their Nazi headquarters, and we went over there and leafleted them anyway, and it was a really, really interesting thing.
Yeah.
This is a test. For the next 60 seconds, you will see this in English and Spanish, but not in Yiddish, so you are screwed.
Get cracking on the, is it the Anunnaki or the Anunnaki? I don't know.
Nobody knows. You see, yeah, that's the
point,
deal,
right?
Yeah.
I have two major points to drive home on this, and they're new. So hold on, you're in for a ride. Okay, you will see critics of Sitchin and others that amount to, well, he doesn't know what he's doing because the translations, meaning the traditional translations, are. Don't say what he says it says. And that's an old, old argument that I have. First of all, Sumer was forgotten for 2,000 years. Well up into the 20th century, it didn't exist as far as Assyriologists or anybody that was doing that kind of research. Mesopotamian culture went back to the Assyrians and the Babylonians, and that was it. Mm-hmm. They didn't know about Akkad, and they certainly, not Freighter Akkad, this country. That was the ghetto, the Semitic quarter of the Sumerian Empire, but which it eventually took over, as people often say. But Sumer was only discovered in the mid-1930s by somebody who was looking for Babylon, which shows. So judging from the comparatively recent, that is 75, 80 years of any kind of knowledge of Sumer, a lot of what you have as the quote orthodox translation is actually very, very subject to debate. And when I say this is an old argument where I'm concerned, well, way, way back when Eric von Daniken was just managing his hotel and had hit no chariots from the gods or anybody else, except maybe from his hotel to the airport, I was familiar with a couple of members of the Jim Moseley inner circle that belonged to the Consultants Committee on Semitic Philology. That was Rabbi Yona Ibn Aaron and a friend of Jim's and a polio victim, and John J. Robinson, who was a mover and shaker in a number of different fields. And they got out an interesting newsletter that they described what is now called ancient aliens. They did describe something that was, they call extraterrestrialism. Now, your listeners will know that I'm not a fan of the extraterrestrial hypothesis, so-called.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I'm, you know, I don't count all evidence that uses the term ETH out. And I finally got Rabbi Ibn Aaron to explain to me what the basis for their interpretation of the Hebrew scriptures, which was basically that the God of the Bible, of the Hebrew scriptures, I should specify, was or is an extraterrestrial who came here. And I said, well, that's very interesting. How do you do that? He said, well, I'm very fluent in Aramaic and Hebrew. And to prove it, he did. And I had just come back from my kibbutz experience at 16 in Israel. So I, you know, he knew his stuff. So he said, okay, look in Ezekiel chapter 1. I'm not going to get too deep in the weeds here, but I said, okay, how is the word ruach used? Well, ruach is a very interesting term. It can mean wind. According to, you know, various interpretations, it can mean soul, and it can mean, it has multiple meanings, and it depends on context, as many things in Hebrew do.
Yeah.
I said, well, it seems to mean in Ezekiel something to the effect of whatever it was he was seeing, whatever it was using in the way of power to do all of the wheel within a wheel, turn not as it went maneuvers, that it was some kind of force or fuel. He said, okay, turn back to Genesis 1:1. Well, we didn't actually have a, there's only a King James Bible in the room, so we didn't want to go there. And the word ruach is used there as in the same way. And he said, if you do that with the entirety of the corpus of the Hebrew scriptures, you will find it's a very, very different story. Mm. And he had it all down. Now, I've shown the ones that I've preserved with the thought of, this preceded any of the ancient alien bullshit. And wanted people to know that the translations that are considered orthodox and the people that are critical of Sitchin and others really don't have any kind of special authority, because if Sitchin is the Yonah ibn Aaron of the Sumerian civilization, his reading has as good a interpretation credibility as you just turned into one of the Anunnaki. That's true. I'm sorry.
Squirrel.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
So there is that. And I wanted to make that point because I think anytime you see one of these, I have the names of, I'm giving names. I'm taking names and taking them down. Who were these people? Not Eusebius. Hold on. I have it here. I have it here on a piece of paper. No, I don't have it here on a piece of paper.
Is it start with you?
No.
Okay.
It's just these people who critique the Sitchin interpretation based on not on their own interpretation, but on the standard translations of Sumerian texts, which are not very old. I mean,
yeah,
you know, we're still working on Linear A from the Minoans, much less. I mean, it's just it's outrageous what they do. Look, I have pictures of them. It's proof, real proof. But you can't see that because this is a radio.
There are people on a piece of paper, y'all.
I have the paper right here from Mr. Hitler, and he assures me he will not invade Poland.
Right there, I seen it.
It's in writing. Okay, now, so if I've established that there is doubt about people who were steeped in Babylonian and Assyrian culture much later, they had virtually forgotten the Sumerians, but they had borrowed some of their epics in translation into Babylonian and Neo-Assyrian dialects, I guess. But the first time anybody ever saw Sumerian was 1930-something. So it's a long haul to say that that these people who were looking, kind of like what used to be called biblical archaeology, which is people that would dig up stuff, they would interpret it in terms of the Bible rather than letting it speak for itself from the material culture. And sometimes it agrees with very old texts and sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But the point is, you don't prejudge based on, you know, if you go to look for Troy based on the Iliad, you may or may not find something of interest. But if you if you look for Troy just based on the notion that if there was a Troy, we'll find it, then you may get a more sensible answer, which could be A, Troy never existed, and or B, Troy existed, or C, Troy existed, but not quite in the way that Homer, quote unquote, describes. Same thing with the Hebrew scriptures. They may be very correct, as in the original anyway, but I read Hebrew well enough that I can say categorically that I believe it was Robert Graves that said, translation, all translation is a lie. He said, a good translation is a polite lie, but it's still a lie. Ancient Hebrew is written without any vowels. And if you take the word to mean something slightly different in its in the way it's pronounced, it's going to be interpreted entirely differently. The word for angel, which in Greek was angelos or something, I don't speak Greek, let alone ancient Greek.
well, why not?
because I'm old and set in my ways. But that's not important right now. What is important is that you could have an entirely different reading. And the proof of that is how many different translations, so-called, of biblical literature, Old and New Testament, Hebrew scriptures and Christian scripture, which is, you know, originally in Greek, presumably, maybe in Aramaic, but there's no trace of an Aramaic original. So if there was one, it's gone and forgotten. But, and that is likely, by the way, how do you imagine that Jesus, being a Jew, talking almost exclusively to Jews, according to the New Testament, was talking in Greek to them?
Yeah.
A, they probably knew a few phrases like, please don't kill me, Romans.
And where is your bathroom?
In those days, it would have been Ephel HaBeit Shemush in Hebrew, which probably the Romans had these communal bathrooms that were pretty disgusting, really.
Oh, like the troughs at the baseball stadium.
Yeah, they just stare at each other.
Yeah.
I could tell you a story about needing to go in the New York subway system that was riveted in my mind as Gene Steinberg stood by whistling. And it's just not one of my favorite memories of the Big Apple.
Well, let's, before we get too far into bathroom culture, I think it might be good to kind of bring our listeners who may not know who the Anunnaki or Anunnaki or some other pronunciation are. And so I just thought it may be good to give a little backstory. So what I have found, and, you know, Alan, you may disagree with a lot of the information that I'm going to convey.
I disagree. I totally disagree.
I vehemently disagree.
You don't know what you're talking about, but I do.
Finally, someone has said it.
Thank you.
I went out and got 38 pages worth of research for this thing tonight. So, you know, we're not going to hit all of them. So
I didn't have to do any research.
Oh, is that all blank paper?
I knew it all just spontaneously and didn't actually bone up for this at all. Really, I promise you on in Jesus' name, amen.
So you're probably, I have a feeling my very first sentence that I'm going to read, you're going to disagree with. So what I have here is that the Anunnaki means those of royal blood, and they inhabited the earth during ancient Sumerian time in Mesopotamia.
No, I don't disagree with that. I think that's probably an accurate interpretation. But what does royal blood mean? I mean, you have something, I hate to call it more recent times, but it is by a couple of thousand years. You have that entire range of theories about the Merovingians being of descent from King David, and that they had that in their markers, and that you could find that mm-hmm. in the fleur-de-lis, et cetera, et cetera. It's something that I don't subscribe to altogether. But the point is, royal blood doesn't necessarily mean that they were ordinary humans, or that they were human at all. It means that right. they were the first of all, it does suggest that they were very special. That is, right. they were something unto themselves, because if they weren't, then they would be commoners, right? And right. So they probably...
They would have those of common blood instead, right? So
right. Well, or some of both.
Yeah.
But if it says those of royal blood, either they were, or it implies that they were a group unto themselves. Very like all of the royal houses of Europe today, which you look at pictures of the Tsar and his contemporary, the last Tsar, and his contemporaries in England and Germany, they look very much like the same people, because you can only do inbreeding so much. Ask my friends in Alabama.
So what I've got here is
now that, y'all don't take that too personal, okay? Y'all in Alabama, I like you. You a lot.
Whatever
I
those like guys in the band, whatever those guys in the band Alabama do with their own time is their own time.
That's right.
So the Sumerian civilization was in the Persian Gulf and came to be somewhere around 2000 to 4000 BC. Was what I found in my notes here.
4000 to 2000.
Yeah, I was going to say 4000 to 2000.
I went backwards. I know. Well, it's time's all together anyway.
So. Relatively speaking.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't meet my relatives. Oh, gosh, I need a theory.
The Greeks named the region Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers, most of which lies in modern state of Iraq. The first recorded civilization of mankind, they were advanced with currency, astronomy, and farming. Of course, this is the Sumerians that we're speaking of. It is believed that they first came from the east, but whether by sea or by highlands is unknown. It's believed that they're not a local people, that they migrated into the area and then set up residence in that area.
They
spoke an Indo-European language, as opposed to the Semitic languages that were everywhere else in that area of the world.
Found here that the 5th millennium BC, a people known as the Ubaidians established settlements in the region, later known as Sumer. It has been noticed out there that there are clear similarities between Ubaid artwork and that of old Europe, which flourished between 6,000 and 3,500 BC.
BCE. Before the Common Era. Yeah, it matters. I when I watch documentary programs, if they say AD and BC, I figure, well, you know, they're inured with the or enamored of the Christian mythos.
So
and
BC.
Somehow I don't think
Christ.
You are
no.
that enamored with
the well, and-
mythos.
You know,
Jesus Wall, this lonesome valley.
If it has an echo, you know that it's true.
In the beginning,
So to go off on a little tangent, though, I will say that I never understood the idea that BC meant before Christ, when they've established that Christ in air quotes was born in before AD. So, but anyways, tangent over.
They don't know dates back then. You know, it's not like he got a birth certificate or anything.
He's got it. They found his social security ID.
They had that, sure. Yeah, but
chiseled into a tablet. So
also the execution order, which the Romans executed for crimes against humanity.
Yeah. So the first Sumerian ruler of the historical era was Etana, the king of Kish, which described in a document written centuries later as the man who stabilized all the lands. An early dynastic, I probably said that wrong, period of Sumer covers the part of third millennium from 2800 to 2400 BC and ends with the conquest of Sumer by a Semitic king of the north, Sargon
of Akkad.
Sargon, take me away.
Triumph of the Semites. We don't speak Sumerian. They sound like Nazis. Let's erase all memory of them.
Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting here, and I won't go through the whole you know, it's almost like the baguettes, right? The kingship changeovers over the years. But I think it's really interesting that in all these ruling, it talks about, so this person ruled for 43,200 years. The next one ruled for 28,800 years, then 36,000 years, then 108,000 years. So it's always, you know, I've always thought it interesting, especially in the Bible where it talks about, you know, people living for hundreds or thousands of years. If, you know, they thought about time differently, or, you know, just how that works together.
A day to God is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years to us is just a day to God.
I'm not as old as Methuselah, but I'm getting there.
As my dad would say, Methuselah's a geezer.
Yeah, he was a geezer, all right. That may have something to do with the lack of a zero in primordial times, so that, and also I can't say this about Sumerian, which was not a Semitic language, but in Semitic languages there tend to be symbolic meanings to numbers. For example, King David was said to have ruled for 40 years, and Solomon, his son, conveniently enough, is said to rule for 40 years. But a better understanding of that is for a long time. That's the way you say for a long time. I believe some of the current problems we're having with the Ukrainians, actually problems with the Russians, but in some cultures, and this is certainly not true in American culture, instead of a literal interpretation of what you're trying to convey, you do an exaggerated version, because that's simply the way you learn to talk. The only thing I know of in America that does that is fishing.
Got it?
Yes.
So, and speaking of fishing, you know, let's assume that those dates do mean a very, very long time. That suggests to me that maybe these were truly extraordinary people. And I don't know how many imaginary zeros you have to put on something to convey these were extraordinary beings who lived long.
Right.
Very long, longer, much longer than we do. You know, you get to the biblical, there were giants in those days. Well, we use the word giant. There's a giant sale down at Walmart.
Right.
Okay. That doesn't mean that giants are being employed at Walmart. Far from it. But it means that it's a big sale. Right. So the equivalent terms may mean something like They're tall. And if you look at as far back as the times that we're speaking about, tall would have been 5'10".
Yeah.
So, you know, it may be that these were very long-lived beings who also had certain abilities or powers, and that they were, how to put this, they were not the same sort of being as the people who lived there, whether they were the group of people that you suggested, which is possible, or the people who came from the east. I'll give you a clue. It's late, and it's very late, but it comes from a Babylonian priest named Berosus. You've probably heard the quote before, but you're going to hear it again. This is Eusebius's version. In the very first year, there appeared from the Red Sea, that's usually translated Erythinian Sea, in an area bordering on Babylonia, a frightening monster named Oannes. It's sort of a cognate of the name John. It had the whole body of a fish, but underneath and attached to the head of the fish, there was another head, human, and joined to the tail of the fish. Feet, like those of a man, and it had a human voice. Its form had been preserved in sculpture to this day. That's Eusebius's day, not ours. Mm-hmm. Berosus says that this monster spent its days with men, never eating anything, but teaching men the skills necessary for writing and for doing mathematics and for all sorts of knowledge, how to build cities, found temples, and make laws. It taught men how to determine borders and divide land, also how to plant seeds and then to harvest their fruits and vegetables. In short, it taught men all those things conducive to a settled and civilized life. At the end of the day, this monster, Oannes, went back to the sea and spent the night. It was amphibious, able to live on land and in the sea. Later, other monsters similar to Oannes appeared, about whom Berosus gave more information in his writings on the kings. On the kings. We're talking about in early Sumer. Berosus says about Oannes that it had written as follows about the creation and government of the world and had given these explanations to men.
So the what you're kind of talking about there is also called the Apkallu, A-P-K-A-L-L-U, and also called the Seven Sumerian Sages. And so throughout, there's a list that exists called like the List of Kings or King's List that basically tells all the different kings over the years and the changing of hands for Sumerian rule. And for each king, there is a paired sage, and each paired sage is thought to be one of these seven Sumerian sages. And they're described as being fish people, for lack of a better term, having, you know, heads and bodies of fishes, but also of men.
Yep, that's it. Gives you an indication that at least the advisors to these long-lived royal personages were, in fact, beings from, let's just say, otherwhere.
Yeah.
That they were amphibious beings that were able to stay out of water or equivalent of water for only limited periods of time. And we don't know at what point they ceased to be actually these amphibious beings and became a priesthood, which today still manifests in the regalia of bishops and other prelates of the Roman Catholic Church, because you see the fish head mitre, which is clearly a fish head if you look at it twice, and if you look at it in terms of the illustrations, if you can call them that, of ancient Sumer, then Akkad, then Babylonia, then Assyria, then back to Babylonia. You'll find that that they are wearing fish outfits that are very similar to Episcopal regalia even mm-hmm. today. So there's a continuity there. What it means may be seen in terms of conventional material history, or it may be something more in line with what Zacharias Sitchin and others have said.
So to take that and go backwards a little bit in talking about folks, but there's I think a lot of people think that the seven sages of Sumeria were created or at least sent by Enki and Enlil, which are kind of the two, not the highest rulers of the Anunnaki, but like the next level down. So if you want to think of in Norse mythology, you know, you have Odin, and then you got, you know, below Odin, you got some demigods. That's where the Enki and Enlil would fit into this story. But they are kind of treated as like the central characters in a lot of the myths and legends of the Anunnaki.
Well, even now, there's a lot of Gnosticism that talk about that as well, right? Talking about that those two are the actual gods of one of the Old Testament, one of the New, were actually Enki and Enlil.
There is a Gnostic document that was found at Nag Hammadi called the The Truth of the Archons. I'm translating that loosely. And it goes into the tales that these watchers are in fact beings far beyond human who watch and perhaps manipulate history. And that was, you know, that dates from circa 300 CE. I mean, we don't know because they mm-hmm. were suppressed and are fortunate that they survived. I think that the notion that the Anunnaki come Oannes, whatever you want to call them, and even if you get down to it, the Nomo that is believed in by several African tribal groups, or they were up until 20 years ago when 10 years ago even, when the Islamic State came into Timbuktu and burned a lot of records that go back at least 1,000 years. So I don't know what the local belief system is still intact, but the Bambara tribe and
the Dogon people.
The Dogon, another tribe related vaguely. And then there's a third group that basically say the same thing. Now, whether they had original material evidence or, as Robert Temple suggested, perhaps the Garamatian Greeks, who were not that far away in North Africa, may have had contact with them and delivered a story that dates from, at least from Sumer, through Babylon, which at one, and Assyria, which had its day in Egypt, and then in turn, that influenced the Greco-Roman North Africa, way down into comparatively recent history. Also, let me say one thing about the timeline that you mentioned. If there is any truth in the notion that these kings were enthroned as long as the records say, and after all, that's the only record we have. You can dispute it. You can say it's court propaganda or it's exaggeration. Or you can say maybe there's, if not literally true, that we're talking about very long-lived beings. If you look at the king's list, it doesn't begin 4,000 years ago. No. It begins 10,000 years ago or more. back to the at least the end of the Ice Age, which is, you know, part of my favorite notion about these things, which is that whether of non-conventional origin or not, there was a worldwide seafaring civilization that mapped the entire planet and that influenced future civilizations. I don't think Atlantis is a real place or Lemuria is a real place, but I think that the legends have something to do with this world civilization, and the maps in distorted form still exist, some of them.
Yeah.
They probably, when the Turks took over Constantinople, they inherited the Great Library of Constantinople, which was almost as old as the Great Library of Alexandria, although it said that it was not in one location, it was several. And as recently as World War I, when Turkey was going through the transition from the Ottoman Empire to modern Turkey, a supposedly secular state, although I would argue that it no longer is. A Western observer who was there during the transition period, where there was a lot of rioting in the streets of what was still Constantinople for a year or so, because you can't get back to Constantinople. No, you can't get back to Constantinople. I'm annoying you. I can see it. Now, Istanbul is Constantinople. He was in a crowd, and a guy, a local person who was looting, banged into him, and in his hand, the man saw, because he was a scholar, he saw a copy of a book that he recognized from ancient times. I believe it was in Latin, so it probably is, you know, from the period of the Byzantine Eastern Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. But the point is, it was one of those books that is known from other references, just like Berossus is only known from other references. None of his works have survived, only fragments that are quoted elsewhere in works that have survived. So in this particular case, it was a book that was thought to have disappeared in great antiquity, that in circa, 1918, 1919, somewhere in that period, the book still existed and was in the hands of a looter. And he said, then the crowd closed in, the man pivoted, and that's the last he saw of it and of the book. There are probably thousands of texts like that in somebody's attic.
Yep.
And that sort of thing happens, has happened all the way into modern times. So there's no reason to doubt the story.
Well, and, you know, not to get too far off the track, but, you know, how many of those things were, taken during World War II and are stored away in some bunker somewhere that nobody's found yet? So,
well, they're finding a lot of stuff now. There are some files. For whatever reasons, the Nazis suppressed the Freemasons and took over their buildings and material culture, including written materials. And they were stored away, and apparently that has been found, and they're being sorted through now. Now, I don't know if they're just going to wind up in the legendary basement of the Smithsonian, or whether they will be available to scholars. It's hard to say, because the Dead Sea Scrolls for a long, long time were restricted to a little group of mostly monastic scholars who would dole out information at their leisure. Mm. And then one of the scholars who was not part of their group put them on the internet, all of the Dead Sea Scrolls, in facsimile, and then it became much more available to scholars all over the world. Yeah. One would hope that would be true.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you may also, it may wind up in a group of people, not necessarily monastic scholars, but some group with a particular axe to grind who simply don't want all of this material to be out there, whether it's a Masonic group that claims it or something else, I don't know.
So
it's possible either way, but I mean, they are. Masonry is inherently ipso facto secretive by its nature, and I don't think there's anything sinister about that. I think that that's just the way that Freemasonry is. But the point is, it's their stuff, and if it winds up back in the hands of the many reborn Masonic lodges, they might not be so forthcoming with material that may have be, for example, ritual regalia or ritual materials that date back how far? A long, long time ago. Yeah.
Founding Fathers' time, probably. So,
older than Methuselah.
Yeah. So I did want to take a real quick kind of sidestep and talk a little bit about some translation stuff. That so Stefan and I watched a program on the Gaia Network a little ways back. It's called Ancient Civilizations, and one of the things that they talk about in there is that the possibility that humans that there's an erroneous translation between things like Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden, and that Adam actually means animal. And the Garden of Eden is more like pen. And so it was more like that humans were treated as it is almost like livestock or whatever and kept in a pen. And then you have the serpent, which is maybe Enlil, that came along and decided to free the animals from the pen and teach them how to read and write and farm and all this kind of stuff. And then Enki was the guy. So the bad guy, the...
I can see me. It's a miracle. Okay.
So
I now have a real screen.
You're coming in.
Old guy sitting in a chair.
Yeah. You were coming in handsome, twice there though. For a second.
Handsome guy. No, I'm sorry. I'm so rude.
So, but yeah, so you know, talking... Circling back on the Nomo, some of the, again, descriptions of the Nomo are that they were masters of water, the monitors, and even the teachers, and that they came kind of from the sea to teach the tribes how to do certain things, and then each day they would return back to the sea, that they couldn't stay on land or whatever for, you know, during... and then I wanted to make two corollaries that I thought of. One, the men in black kind of descriptions of, you know, needing a glass of water to take a pill, that they would turn red, but as soon as they drank their water, they would kind of turn back to normal pinkish hue. And then number two is the, you know, the possibility of whether or not the seven sages of Sumeria are also potentially the secret chiefs, you know, as discussed in Thelma and by Aleister Crowley, and that maybe even one of, you know, the entity that gave Aleister his, you know, the writing, Iwas, I'm probably going to pronounce that wrong,
Iwas,
that he is actually one of, or sorry, he or she is actually one of the seven sages of Sumeria.
The number that you of sages varies from culture to culture. In India, it's the nine unknown. And the medieval Jewish term is Lamed Vavniks, which is 35 sages or something.
Some of the different areas kind of differ on the number of sages, but, and I don't know that the seven, you know, I don't want to necessarily get bogged down in the actual number.
Seven, but... it's been considered a lucky number from great antiquity.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, just the idea that maybe there is some correlation, you know, kind of like today, even one region will call something a swamp ape, and another region calls it a Sasquatch, and another region calls it a Bigfoot, but it's all probably the same thing. is this a similar situation where you've got, you know, the Nomo and the Apkala and potentially even the secret chiefs are really all the same unit of individuals, if you will, that are representing and kind of guiding humans throughout history.
Yeah, I think that is probably true. The reality of the secret chief is something that I've given credence to for very good reasons for a very long time. But there is no reason to think that they are a different group of beings, that is, discarnate beings that aid humanity, that they are not the same thing as the ascended masters of theosophy, the seven sages, the Lama Dvabniks, the bodhisattvas of Buddhism. There's mm-hmm. no reason to think that they're different. Whether they're the same beings that were around in antiquity or whether they are outside of time, which is very possible, that I don't know. Yeah. But I think they are all the same thing.
Well, I'm glad we agree.
Wait, the secret chiefs are they use Morse.
Okay.
With me anyway. They're saying he's right, Alan. Shut the fuck up.
So real quick, I want to take just a quick step back and talk about I just got one more thing to talk about, and that is the origin of the Anunnaki. And I think this is probably going to be the sword you die on, Alan, but
the
big topic of debate. So I think that a lot of things point to, or a lot of theories point to, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, right? That either they came from another civilization far, far away. They came from Nibiru, which is supposedly this planet that orbits around and caused two planets to break up, and one of those planets became the Earth, and then they inhabited the Earth, and so on and so forth. But the standing hypothesis is that they come from somewhere else, not on Earth. And I think that my opinion, and I suspect similar in the room, so to speak, is that they've always been here. They predate humanity, and they're just helping us not kill each other so that we don't inadvertently kill them.
Well, I'm very influenced by Velikovsky, and one of the first things that you need to know is that the event that took place that eliminated the dinosaurs was neither the first nor perhaps the last intrusion of a very large unidentified object banging into the Earth. And it is Velikovsky's hypothesis. I wouldn't just call it an opinion. He has a great deal to back it up. That a planet, he said the comet Venus, and provided certain evidence of that. But let's not, you know, be caught in, again, the weeds of what he said specifically, because he was looking at phenomena taking place on the Earth and making an educated guess as to what was causing the phenomena. If you simply take the fact that a planetary body had a close brush with Earth, it caused major changes in the Earth, tectonic changes, volcanoes, rivers running with blood, et cetera, and that was the case in ancient times. These were attributed to the gods. But the trauma involved created a sort of PTSD among the population of Earth, as he detailed in Earth and Amnesia, I think was the name of it, that essentially it was forgotten, and then the events were accounted for in more, shall we say, celestial terms. But nowhere does Velikovsky say that this planetary body was an inhabited body. I think, based on current research on, let's not go to Nibiru, let's call it Planet X, there is a really organized search in, quote, legitimate astronomical circles for Planet X. Reason being, there is a perturbation, is that the right term, of the orbits of the existing known planetary bodies that is unaccounted for, unless there is a planet beyond what used to be a planet until they decided to say otherwise, Pluto, and that is Planet X, the ninth actual planet, although there is a move of which I am a part.
Same.
To get Pluto returned to its proper status as a planetary body so that Dr. Tombaugh can rest in peace.
Agreed.
Right?
Yep.
But the point is, if this is a planetary body, it's not necessarily inhabited, but when it passes close to the Earth, among other places, it creates a warping in the space-time continuum. And what happens, I think, is that a door opens and something comes through. In other words, that's my use of M theory or the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, saying that these worlds exist. Ordinarily, they don't touch one another. But if you have a strange electromagnetic effect or gravitational effect or whatever, sometimes doors open and sometimes something comes out. And I think that what the Sumerians were referring to as Nibiru, which apparently for them was a star, a fixed star, although there is reason to doubt that. It is likely that what they are referring to, mythologized, is a breakthrough from another dimension by beings that were far more advanced than any earthly civilization, and that became the tutelary beings of Sumerian culture, and perhaps other ancient cultures too, many of which have legends of tutelary beings, sometimes referred to as gods, but also referred to as sages, teachers, whatever. And that's it. My feeling is that a little hybrid Velikovsky and a little hybrid Sitchin by way of the Sumerians is, there is a planet that once in a while approaches the Earth, and fortunately, we are fortunate that it doesn't hit us so far, but that that warps the space-time continuum and shit happens, as the astronomers say.
Yeah. And then there's that theory there is a planet that exists exactly at our opposite, so much so that we can't see it because it's always in direct line with the sun as it sits completely on the other side, as well as the asteroid belt being a planet that once collided here with us and created certain things as well.
And perhaps took the atmosphere of Mars.
Yeah.
Yep. Or maybe Mars was once a moon of that bigger planet.
Right. That, yeah, I've heard that as well, that Mars was possibly a moon of that planet.
That's a big moon.
It's no moon.
No moon at all. up above, even fireflies.
So, I mean, I think that for me covers, I mean, like I said, I had lots of research, but I mean, we hit all the really high points on the Anunnaki, you know, kind of the origin story, the Sumerians and the sages and all that kind of jazz. And I really, you know, yeah. So anything else that Stefan that you wanted to add or Alan that we didn't touch on that you wanted to.
I mean, there's just all. I mean, there's just so much to talk about with the Anunnaki, especially you get into occult stuff, you get into ETH and things like that. We didn't even get into the reptilian conspiracy theory, any of that goodness. Or like I had said, like it, they had touched on that Gnostic view of Enki and Enlil being brothers, and. One was the ancient god of the Old Testament who was fire and brimstone and kind of a bad guy, so to speak, whereas the New Testament god was more, you know, Jesus was a representation of that, that was more of the kinder version. And that even if you go back to the creation myth, that it was possible that was the one, because women were the ones that stayed back, right? They stayed back. They were the educated ones. They were the ones that taught the children how to read and how to do everything. The men simply hunted. And if they were slaves for the Anunnaki, like a lot of people believe, you know, there's a big belief that one of these reptilian Anunnaki gods is the one that showed Eve, one of the women, because she was the intelligent one, that's why he went to her, how to escape the wrath of God, which would have been, I think it was Enki was the wrath of God one, you know, right. And Leo was the one that was like, hey, here's how I can teach you how to rise up against them, against this and stop being slaves, so to speak. And that over time, you know, got translated into what we now know as the Jewish and creation myth, right? So interesting. I love digging into this, and just like you said, that we haven't even reached 100 years of learning about Sumeria. What are we going to learn more when we find
out?
Probably a lot is undiscovered. I mean, the way archaeology works is very proper archaeology is very slow and very thorough, and it's very frustrating for people getting on in years like me, because I don't care what's happening in 2050. I will be somebody else at that point. But be that as it may, you can expect new discoveries anytime, and it may change everything. Just like the James Webb telescope peering backwards through time at the almost beginning of the universe, I comfortably predict, and I'm not alone in this, that will change everything in terms of cosmology and perhaps even in terms of spiritual beliefs. That said, I'm not going to comment too much on the Gnostic materials, because that's a whole, you want to do an episode on that altogether, like 3 hours, I'll be glad to do it. And how come those guys in Kentucky never have me on their podcast? But here you go. I want to defend the Hebrew scriptures a little bit. If they seem like the image of the divinity is hostile and intolerant, put it in the context of the times that these scriptures were written. First of all, they were influenced by the Babylonians, who were influenced by the Sumerians. And the picture that they paint is relatively violent for a time that was extremely violent. So they reflect the times at which they were written. And the notion that you can project talk about the deity is about the deity and not about the people who are trying to talk about it is probably a bad move. I think that it's true for its time and read in that context as profitable as reading the Iliad or the Odyssey, which is what I would compare it to.
Yeah.
The other thing, the reptilian thing, it has been pointed out that there are a lot of anti-Semitic tropes used in talking about these supposed hidden reptilians. And what can I say? I mean, I'm not going to defend that because I don't believe that that's true. The germ of truth is we all have a reptile brain as part of our complex brain structure. So if you want to give credence to that, you could say we're all reptilians.
We're just dinosaurs evolved.
We're all reptiles. Well, we have several other brains that have evolved beyond that. But yeah. I mean, I'm not an expert on brain physiology, but it's the part that regulates the autonomic functions like heartbeat. Lose that and you lose heartbeat. But it also may be the source of things like paranoia. And I mean, I don't want to go too deeply into that, but we're all reptilians at our core.
Dracula.
The Queen of England is not a reptile.
You shut up. She is too. Charles is a direct bloodline to Dracula.
Well, that may be true for Charles, but Pip Pip Cheerio, he looks like they all look. Inbreds. They're all
inbred with a pair of sails on his head.
So anyway, so that's I think all that we have for this episode on the Anunnaki. But like you said, we could certainly come back together sometime in the future and do a part two or dive deeper into one particular part of the Anunnaki as well.
Or hell, anything. Alan, we always appreciate you joining us, man. It is always informational and fun at the same time.
Can I throw out one more notion?
Please.
Sure, yeah.
You mentioned in passing the magical implications of the Anunnaki. Mm-hmm. If the theory that I presented about the planetary body disrupting the space-time continuum is correct, then what we do in magical workings that open portals to other brains, B-R-A-N-E-S, dimensions, if I don't like to use that term because it's too rooted in New Agey crap.
Mm-hmm.
That's New Agey crap. Yeah. but nevertheless, the process may be to, and this could be investigated, it could be to open one of those windows in the same manner that a planetary body does, but not on a world scale, but just in the presence of these objects. Thus, when you go back to the so-called Babylon work,
that's what I was going to
by the Arthur. Infamous Lafayette Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons.
Yep.
It has been said they opened a door and something came through. So we may be doing the same thing and they never closed their portal.
Yep,
but I know somebody who's planning to.
So do we. So
do we. Those UFOs while they're still here.
Yep, as do we. And yeah, who knows? It's funny you brought that up because I was going to bring up the exact same thing. So I'm thinking the same way. So.
But the secret chiefs told you, close the program out before he says all this.
Don't share secrets. They secrets.
No, that's William, what's his name? Don't share secrets with the profane.
So, yeah, just again, to wrap up, appreciate the additional insight. I mean, I think it makes sense that we're basically doing localized versions of what that planetary mass is doing on the broader scale. Alan, I think you've got at least one new book out since we last spoke to you, and maybe another one coming. Do you want to tell anybody about that stuff?
Of course. First of all, The Complete Secret Cipher of the Euphonauts is having its third incarnation. Woo! And buy it because it's seminal. Speaking of semen, how's that for a transition?
Yeah, really.
The Grail Within is undergoing some revisions, and even people that have an edition might want to get the new edition with the introduction by Stephanie Quick. And a lot of stuff about my personal sexual magic experiences and those of several others. You have to get a copy or you will never understand sexual magic. Not even if you're a ninth degree in the what an order. Right? There are also several other books in the immediate future, I am told by my publisher, Olaf, and they should be out soon.
Well, so fantastic.
Tune into the Celestial Lodge of Sirius. I almost said syphilis.
Well, similar.
Well, I've got semen on the brain. Yes,
yeah. You should probably clean that off.
Only on the lizard brain, though.
We are big proponents of getting your books. We always do as soon as we see a new one. So if you're listening out there, absolutely grab these if you want some good insight into everything worth it.
Like he says.
Yeah. Do as he does and as he says.
Ooh, Lordy, thank you, Alan Greenfield. Oh man, I've gone out and I've bought so many Hawaiian shirts now because of Alan Greenfield.
Well, after today's episode, it makes me want some Anu gnocchi soup.
Get out of here. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Don't you mess up my chicken and gnocchi soup, man. That's the best thing at Olive Garden. I'm just letting you guys know. But I love you, Alan Greenfield. Guys, go buy his books. Olav is printing books left and right. You can find him on Amazon. But also go to talangreenfield.com. That's his main website there to check out all his stuff. We love you, Alan. Man.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
So many more books in the works.
I can't wait, dude. Like my Alan Greenfield collection is like ridiculous now. So I know some weird shit now that I didn't know before. Thank you, Alan Greenfield.
Yeah. I mean, just for the new stuff that's coming with the, you know, with the new edition of Euphonauts, makes me want to pick up another copy.
Oh, I know. I'm about to get another copy because, yeah, I want to know what it is too. And even been listening to Penny Royal. I think there's two or three episodes out now, season two, which, man, it's really, really good. And it's weird synchronicities how it's hitting some of the things that we've been talking about, which I've already hit Nathan up, been like, dude, this is already hitting some of the things we're talking about. But he brought up Greenfield as well again. And so, like, just some different stuff, man. I just love the synchronicities, as well as a friend of ours sending us an article on the Anunnaki without even knowing that this episode was coming out. Just thought we would find it interesting. So I love synchronicities. I love when you guys are our audience, our blanket huggers, when you guys are on that synchronicity train with us as well. Absolutely love it.
We're in the party train.
We are. We're in the party train. JD's in the caboose, where he is going to be locked up for the duration of the trip.
So. In his trunk.
In his trunk of dreams. But Josh, before we get out of here, I want to get to the final segment of the evening, which of course is our encounters from the Fearscape. All right. So this week I have a story here, a cryptid sighting. We actually have a cryptid sighting, a story. We haven't had one of those in quite a while. I think, man, you know what? I think maybe one of the last. Do you remember that story that guy sent in to us where he was like four wheeling in Oregon or Washington or something like that?
Where he thought like something was trying to choke him out or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, man. I wish, dude, never man, if you're listening, respond to our email because I want the dude on our show because that story's insane. But anyways, I think that's the last time we had anything like that, like in the woods type thing. But anyways, this one comes from a listener named Holly from the Sunshine State, Florida. And here is Holly's story.
So this was sighted not in Florida, but actually in my hometown of Virginia Beach before I moved out of the country one night. I was heading home at like 2 a.m. and I turned onto my road to see what I thought was a man standing in the ditch. But I instantly knew he wasn't an actual human. He was tall and kneeling on the side of the ditch. He had what looked like a trench coat and possibly a top hat and was in all black. As my headlights shone on him, he turned his head just enough to the side to see me, but I couldn't see his face because there was no face. I quickly continued by, but when I looked in the rearview mirror, he was gone. I felt like it was flying behind my car the length of the entire road home. I can't explain it. It's just something I felt. I rushed inside and felt like it was outside my window all night. No one has ever been able to explain to me what I saw. Ever. If you have any thoughts, let me know. I never saw it again after that. And I have spiritual gifts. I'm a practicing witch from a long line of women with gifts, and none of them can explain it, and I have no theories.
I mean, the depiction to me, Josh, sounds like Mr. Hyde, the classic Mr. Hyde, but I feel like there is an urban legend that is a man in a cape and a top hat. Like, there's something that I can't place my finger on, and JD's sleeping, or I'd ask him.
Well, I remember I've heard stories of thinking about how your brain processes, right, what you see, and how sometimes your brain obscures things to protect them from you.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me wonder if it had a face, but either A, it was familiar, and the brain protected her from seeing a familiar face like that, right? Mm-hmm. Or B, it was just so disfigured and hideous that, again, the brain protected her from seeing that.
Yeah. Oh, that there is. So I knew I had heard of this before, and he's called the Hat Man. So Holly, if you're listening, this is called the Hat Man, and the Hat Man fits. And I think we covered the Hat Man when we talked about shadow people. I think we covered shadow people in a cryptid episode once. And in that, he is categorized alongside shadow people. What do you say? Somebody said he may look nice in his jaunty cap, but there's nothing fedorable about this madman in black. But they usually say he's between 6 and 10 feet tall, and this tends to have him crouch and hunch over. Other people believe that this is kind of where the story of the Crooked Man comes from, as well. And the Crooked Man that was in Conjuring 2, they say, was actually a depiction of the Hat Man as well. But yeah, the Hat Man goes back quite a ways.
I mean, kind of almost also kind of sounds like a Man in Black type.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was kind of thinking of too. And there's also stories that he appears, of course, right before somebody dies. So there's this theory that he's also a Reaper. You know, there's some things like that. There's a German soldier that said that he responded by saying his name was Scratch, which of course implies the devil. It always implies the devil. Of course, there's that interdimensional being. It also kind of reminds me of that, the Ink People or whatever that one was we covered that one time as well, where they're two dimensional. Do you remember that?
That was the Stick People.
Yeah, the Stick People. This,
because I think we talked about that on Astral Stew, because, or maybe not, because we were talking about how they talk about that in the Art of Dreaming.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Josh, that you say that, because another theory, the last one I'm going to talk about here, which I just quickly typed in creature, black cape, black hat, and the Hat Man came up, but one of the theories here says that the Hat Man is an astral projection, and someone traveling outside of their body can be terrorized by the Hat Man while astral traveling. It's a possibility that either A, this is his astral body, you know, mm-hmm. going after other astral travelers, or what, I don't know.
So I remember where all this came up from before. It's when we were talking about Slender Man.
Oh yeah, because some of the older versions of Slender Man, absolutely.
Influences things, yep. Yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, Holly, I didn't expect a big long discussion like that, but thank you. So if you're interesting, quick Google search had me find Hat Man. So I think what you saw was a Hat Man. So if you want to do some more research like that, what I pulled up here was an article talking about an episode of a podcast called Guide to the Unknown. And this is episode 39, where they spend the entire episode talking about the Hat Man. So there may be some more info there for you.
Lesser known Soundgarden song, I think.
Hat Man covers your head when it's hot. Anyways, we got to get out of here, you guys. Again, thank you so much to Alan Greenfield, mentor, friend, hero of the paranormal. We love you, brother.
Almost an advocate, you would say.
I would 100%. While randomly being very skeptical, I love, people don't realize that about Alan, because everybody just thinks he's like, yee-hee, paranormal. But he's actually one of the most skeptical dudes I know. And so when he believes something, I'm a little more apt to believe it myself, because I know he's done some work on it.
Yep.
That's all I got to say
about that. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, we're going to get out of here. Like I said, we got a fun show next week. Got a really, really cool guest. I'm not going to spoil it, but it's going to be, we've been talking. I'm just going to give you the words crypto terrestrial. That's all I'm going to say.
And I'm just going to say, throw another shrimp on the Barbie.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. But it's going to be a great episode. We'll see you guys next week. Remember to go to fearscapepodcast.com. You can submit your encounters for the Fearscape there on the submit a sighting, or fearscapepodcast@gmail.com, or just hit us up on social media. Make sure you guys check out Tech Talk. We just dropped our second episode of Tech Talk for the debrief. We're talking about the psionics. You guys have heard us talk about the psionics 100 million times on the show, because that's where Josh was talking about the things that we've caught on camera. A lot of it's been on the psionics. Amazing stuff that we've posted on our Fearscape pages that Josh has put. Any video that looks like night vision, that's from the psionics, the Aurora Pro.
Yep.
So we had an opportunity to review that and talk about
Flight Radar
24. I kind of wanted to say Flight Tracker. But Flight Radar 24, we got to talk about that. But you can go to the debrief.org, check that out, or just go to the YouTube.coms.
This is going to the YouTubes.
I'm talking like JD now. And just type in the debrief and Tech Talk, and you'll be able to find both of our episodes there. Make sure to like, subscribe, and all of that stuff, not only to our stuff, but to the debrief as well. Yeah. We love those guys at the debrief, and they are big advocates of the things that we do. So we wanted to give them a quick shout out. But Josh, let's get out of here, man.
Let's skedaddle.
I already miss you, and I'm going to be seeing you soon. So,
yep.
All right. But thank you guys so much for tuning in to Fearscape Paranormal here on the Fearscape Media Network. Make sure to check out fearscapemedia.com for all of those other wonderful podcasts, especially Mysteries of the Dark, because that's my other show and I love it. But let's go ahead and get out of here. My name is Stefan. And just a reminder, everybody, keep your eyes to the skies.
And this has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight.
I'm holding my blanket extra tight while I'm getting snoozy.
Because things tend to get spooky when you're listening to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We hope you have enjoyed this guidepost on the road of high strangeness with us. And we thank you, as always, for listening and joining our caravan to the weird and unknown. Please consider supporting us as we continue our journey to find the answers we all seek. Fearscapepodcast.com/support.